Brandela.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You're the first one, so we're waiting for a few more.
Okay, sounds great.
Hope you're feeling good. You sound chipper.
I am. I'm feeling good. I walked without my crutches today.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm real excited about it. And I climbed four stairs.
Very good. You going to keep up the physical therapy?
Till the end of the week. And Friday will be my last day.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you have to give it up. You can do it by yourself.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to still do, leg exercises to develop the muscles.
Good.
I've got some leg weight. And I'm going to use some of those, and it's going to work out good.
Very good.
Paula.
Good evening, Paula.
Good evening. No.
So we're going to start. This is a deeper Zohar class on the Parashah of Noah. We're in section 29 of the Ulam commentary. We're starting with Pasuk 218, and we will actually start with L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kutshabarichu Ishkin Tebit Hilu Urchimu Udhilu Udhilu Urchimu Le'akta Ba'ateh B'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah V'ahino Amadunai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kununei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kununeihu Yona Nachat Liyama Beizdaman Leya Ahununa Uvala Leya Ech La Nafkat Nashmitu Yahya Mineya Vela Parha Miyad Ela begin dekud shabrihu Shalita behahu Ayuta Deyama Jonah fell into the sea, and a great fish swallowed him. So he asked, why did his soul not leave him at once? And he answered, because the Holy One, blessed be He, controls the raging of the sea. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Hanukkah, I just joined the class. I had a phone call from the rabbi, so I'm late.
No problem. We're starting with verse 218. We just finished the Aramaic, and I read the English, and we're now waiting for questions, comments, thoughts.
Okay.
It's a short verse, but it's a little not clear.
Okay. It's where Jonah fell in the sea?
Yes.
Okay.
And I said it was a great fish, even though it,
right.
it didn't say that in the Aramaic. But in the scroll itself, in the verse in Jonah, it does say great fish.
Well, we know Jonah had an assignment, so it wasn't his time to die.
No, but he did die.
Oh, he did?
He died and he was resurrected 3 days later.
Well, yeah. I know that's the picture that we often always see, but I always felt like that was showing that he got his spiritual garments. You know, you've seen the photograph of Jonah above the whale,
yeah.
and the angels giving him his garments.
Correct. But he actually does die.
Okay.
And the actual one way of understanding it is that the fish is his spiritual garment.
Oh, yeah.
The fish represents the tzaddikim. The fish represents the essence of being surrounded by water always. And that's an indication of always being connected to chesed. But the real question that has to be answered, real question that has to be asked, is what is the meaning of the raging of the sea? That wasn't answered earlier.
I'm looking at a bookmark that I have that says, let me get it here. Someone gave it to me as a gift. And it says, the sea is his, for he made it. Psalm 95:5.
Yes, and that is what we discussed earlier in the earlier verses. But the idea of the raging of the sea, he controls it, but we don't really know what the raging of the sea represents. What's the code word in that phrase?
Do we know what the word raging Aramaic is? Yeah, I've been behind in 6, so I haven't caught up with everything, I guess.
Yeah, the last word is diyama, and that's the Aramaic for sea. And so the word before that, geuta, would be the raging,
mm-hmm.
which is cognate to geula, which is redemption. So,
okay, I would have thought, big, mighty. With the word gadol, but okay.
But if you look in the higher, the first words of the verse, where it says he fell into the sea and a fish swallowed him, the third word is layama, which is sea, and nachat is falling. But it's in Hebrew, nachat is the pleasure that you receive by being proud of what you've accomplished and seeing the sharing that you've done being returned to you. You're watching your grandchild play.
Mm-hmm.
That is a grandparent receives nachat. Nachas in Yiddish and Nachat in Hebrew.
Right.
And so, in Aramaic, it's saying falls because it's starting with the nun.
Mm-hmm.
But if you continue reading, the word nuna Nun is fish in Aramaic.
Right. I know.
So the swallowing has to be probably the izdaman, but I'm not sure. That's something that would take a while to research.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go on to verse 219 so we can get an answer on what is the raging of the sea.
Okay.
Kuta dismala desalik leya leya ma de ela uveya istalak veila vahu kuta dimate leya misitra diamina la salka lealmin. Ad kucha barichu, atib leya leya achora, betavin leatraehu. The raging of the sea is the thread from the left, which causes the waves of the sea to rise, and rises with it. But had the other thread of chesed not arrived from the right, it would have never risen. For when the thread from the left goes down to the sea and is held by the sea, the waves awaken and begin to roar for prey, until the Holy One, blessed be He, restrains the waves, holds them back, and they return to their place. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Are they saying there's a left and a right side to chesed?
Well, maybe they're saying that, or maybe they're saying it's left and right within the overall tree. It could be both. It's not clear per se.
Mm-hmm.
We know there is a left and a right to each column.
Right.
And there's as well as a center for each column. But if we go back to an earlier verse in this section, it describes these two threads, that one comes from the left and causes the sea to rage, causes the seas to rise. And it's coming from the left.
Right. And then the right
and then
is calming.
Calming it down. And these two are always active within the sea. On one level, scientifically, it's explaining, based on the science of that generation, it's explaining the idea of gravity, that it causes the waves to rise.
Okay, and I do remember we said at that time they really didn't know much about gravity. It wasn't understood.
Correct. I did say that.
And yeah, I remember that.
It's,
okay.
Because, the issue is modern scientific principle new, or was it known back then? They just didn't have a way of describing it.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that what what you drop falls. So I think they had some kind of, you know, there
they
had to be
known something about it. They just wouldn't know its cause. And since what they know that Hashem causes everything, so they were looking for a way to describe it. So they're saying that the rise of the wave is the rage of the sea. They're saying it's coming from the left, which is true, because gravity is the desire to recede for oneself alone.
But
gravity says everything in the universe comes in you. Centrifugal force says, no, we're going to stay in our place.
Do you think at that time that people were aware that human activity is what causes the sea to rage and nature to act up?
People in the generation, probably not. But Rabbi Shimon and his students, yes. Was teaching all of the what is cause and effect. Where do you think the Kabbalah gets the idea that Hashem controls everything? I wouldn't understand that if I didn't read the Zohar, if I didn't have Kabbalah teachers explaining it to me. And where did they get it? They got it from the Zohar. So, but in the people of the generation, no, they wouldn't. They didn't know anything about the modern science of gravity and astronomy, on any of that. But everything was known to those souls that were capable of handling it. Yet those souls had no real way to describe it, because they didn't have the word gravity or the equivalent in modern Hebrew or Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
They understood that Hashem was responsible for every action in the world, and that human activity caused climactic changes, tsunamis, earthquakes, hurricanes, thunderstorms, all the things that they would consider unnatural or supernatural, or that they couldn't understand. The spiritual people were taught by their teachers, and they taught their students that all of those things are caused by human activity. And this verse is coming to explain how that happens. Should I go on?
Yes.
You want to do one more?
Yeah, we have time to do one more.
Okay.
Hahi dikti, 220. Hahi dikti biso galav ata dishabechem tishabechem li'inun. Gale yama tisha becham ben kata tita bar lon leatava leatraihu divar acher tisha bechem mamash shivcha hulon begin dixalkin beteuta Lemecheme mikan kol man dekasif leistak sala uminda afal gavdila yakil shivcha ihudileya kola mishabechan leya. As it is written, you rule the raging of the sea when the waves thereof rise up. You praise them. One interpretation is that phrase, the Hebrew is teshabechem, is the same as breaking, which is in Hebrew is teshabrem, and pulling them back to their place with the threat of chesed. A different interpretation is that the meaning is literally you praise them. That is, the fact that the waves rise with the desire to see is praiseworthy. From this we can learn that whoever seeks and longs for knowledge, even if he is incapable of attaining it, is praised for his effort. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Do we know who the you is?
Do we know who the you is?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where you see you.
The ones you keep popping up, but I see it's capitalized, and I guess it's Hashem.
It is a... Yeah, of course, it's Hashem who rules the raging
right.
of the sea. He's,
right.
He's in charge of all activity. But even, I think according to English grammar rules, after a colon, you would capitalize the first word, I believe.
Yeah,
I may
would.
Be wrong about that. So, you know, it could also be some other you. But we know that the essence of the Kabbalah's teaching is that Hashem is one and he's in charge of everything.
Well, toward the end of the verse, is it the sort of thing when you have the desire for something but you can't actually fulfill it, it's counted to you as if you had fulfilled it?
It's not quite telling you that.
Okay.
It's saying in a very specific case, if you have a desire to learn, if you have a desire for knowledge, and you have to remember, knowledge is the sefirah that isn't the sefirah between Hachma and Bina.
And yeah.
So if you have a desire for knowledge, but you're not capable, Hashem didn't give you the capability of learning. As an example, someone has a desire to modern physics, but they don't have the capability. They're I don't want to say they're handicapped, but you know, let's say they had a desire to learn modern physics, but they were autistic,
mm-hmm.
or they were some other child who has some physical or mental limitations.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they have the desire to learn is praiseworthy. They're getting some of the light from that knowledge. The effort, the fact that they're trying, they receive much benefit. Now, it's being very specific. It's dealing with this concept of knowledge. And we've never really gone into detail on what is dot. What is the sefirah dot that isn't a sefirah? And how do we understand it? And how, when we don't count Keter, we have to count dot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get that in much greater detail in the Sefer Yetzirah class.
Right, I remember that from the lessons that I had.
Right.
And they always show it on the glyph in little dotted marks. You know,
right.
If Ketzer is shining, then Da'at is not. And if Da'at is showing, then Ketzer is hidden. I mean, that's the way that I kind of portray it.
Yeah, and exactly that's the way that most people do from the glyph. You have the dotted line. So is it a Sephirah or isn't it a Sephirah?
Right.
What is it? If it's not a Sephirah, what is it and what is it doing on the glyph?
And there's 10, not 11. So we heard that often enough.
Well, you can't really hear it often enough. It needs to become part of you.
Right.
But the point is, in our own lives, use myself as an example. I know you love to cook. I don't. Why don't I love to cook? Because I can't do it. I never learned it. Nobody taught me. It's just not something I ever had an interest in. But now all of a sudden in my elderly years, I'm listening to you and to others around me telling me about various, recipes and how to make certain things based on certain recipes. All of a sudden, my interest, not in cooking, but in learning about the recipes and how those recipes relate to the Sephirot, I have a desire for that all of a sudden. I didn't have it even a year ago. But it's something that has come up and I found it interesting. So am I learning it? No, because if you're not cooking with a recipe, you're not learning it. But I'm learning the recipe from the standpoint of Sephirot. So this is telling me that just even thinking about it, there's a benefit. There's light being revealed. Not as much light as someone who is cooking and learning what I just described, the relationship to the Sephirot. That would be the complete structure. That would be the majority, the maximum amount of light to reveal. So there's a lot of wisdom in this set, these three pasukim.
Yeah, I can see that.
And we're out of time, so.
Okay.
Tonight's class, I'm going to be talking about Purim from the standpoint of the Ari. I will not have a handout. But I think you'll enjoy the class anyway, because I'll take it slow.
Okay.
Just don't have the time to post it on the internet.
Okay.
For next year, Bezrat Hashem.
Okay.
Everyone
well, I printed a calendar today till 2022, so... Because I got in, you know, I had to in order to be able to do some of the editing. And I kept going. And I said, I'm going as far as I can go with my energy. And I got to 2022.
Okay. Well, just remember, when we get to 2022, you need to go longer because we got 300 more years to deal with this stuff.
I know. But we got to have a healthy body to live that long, too. So we got to keep...
We're going to learn to heal our bodies that are not healthy. That's not an issue. It's just a matter of time before we learn how to do that.
Thank you for the class today. It's so good to be back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to all. Thank you all for joining us. Shalom.
Shalom.